was in a pontoon boat, driven by my buddy Mike. We're fishing out on the basin for alligator walleye pike. Emo brought his TV and Routy's beagle Fred. He's too old to drive a rabbit, so he comes fishing with us instead. We got lawn chairs, a poker table, a nice cold keg of beer. We're loaded down with so much stuff, Mike can hardly steer.
Okay, everybody! Fishing from Moby Dick. The wife, she thinks I'm working, and the boss, he thinks I'm sick. It's perfect day for fishing, making beer, and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys. Yay! Okay, and we got Captain.
You can't get enough of that song. You really can't.
The Diupers and Captain Kilo on one show. All right. Okay, quiet. Okay. What a delightfully obedient studio audience.
You got to love that.
Okay. So what's been up, Captain?
Fishing. Doing lots of fishing.
Yeah.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, three different trips, three different adventures.
Well, let's start off with what's been happening. Well, you tell me what's going on out there.
We come off of that cold front, right. And things got a little weird.
Remember, Sunday was not wonderful.
No. Monday, because Sunday was so bad, I pushed most of my charters to the afternoon. Monday and Tuesday, I don't think I picked up till 11 o'clock.
Well, that was smart. I've talked to several captains who have had the option, and because you have a few schools of fish would have been hitting in the morning, but they're few and far between.
Yeah. And a lot of them have been small, because right. Usually the small ones don't get affected that much by the cold.
Well, no, it's just like when I was 18, I wasn't affected by stuff right. The way I am now.
Right. We were still young. We didn't quite have a grasp on life yet.
Well, you don't care about all that stuff. You're young. You're crazy. Okay, yeah, I'm going to go for it.
Sure.
You know, what is the old joke about, you know, let's run down there and yeah. Do a couple versus yeah. Let's walk down yeah. And do them all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I'm in the walk down phase.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, me too. I'm done running.
Yeah, so anyway, so what happened on Monday?
Monday was supposed to be my shark charter that I chickened out of.
You know, I got a better part of valor, man. Chickening out was a great thing to do on that shark trip.
Yeah, it turned out for the better, though. The guy was a semi-pro bass fisherman, does a lot of bass guiding up on his home lake, and interested in moving down here and really wanted to get a feel for the fish and the harbor. And
now, that's the guy who does the funeral. He's a funeral director.
Yeah, he's a funeral director. He's also a registered nurse. So
coming to Florida.
No problem getting a job.
Yeah.
He's got it pegged. I mean, the only other thing that you could possibly be is either a bank teller or a pharmacist
right.
down here. So.
Yeah, usually you tell people, well, he's going to have a tough time getting a job. Oh, I'm a funeral director. Okay.
You're fine. They're lining up for you. Literally.
So, anyway, so what happened? You guys left?
We left out of Lashley, and I wanted to fish the east side. I wanted him to see the east side. It's hard to show somebody what Charlotte Harbor is about in one day in one season, because everything changes so much throughout the year here. But I wanted him to see the west or the east side, because I really think the east side is your quintessential flats fishing, yeah. Mangrove fishing spot.
Yeah.
He.
Are you completely out, Steve? If not, take some out of the register. The other one.
He wanted for shark. We didn't do the shark, so let's go do redfish and snook. Once I got out there, saw where the wind was coming from, saw what the tide was doing, and I went right over my slot on the west side. You know, sat in there, we caught some snook, some redfish, some black drum, some sheephead.
So wow, what a bag.
Yeah, it was in that one little slot, and usually that slot is either sheephead, or redfish, or black drum, or snook. Very rarely do you get all of them.
So they're becoming more modern, less segregated.
I guess so. More politically correct.
More politically right. correct, you know, just kind of, okay, everybody, come on to one spot.
Yeah. So we sat in there and fished, and then it was great because I sat there all day. The fish never quit. The whole incoming tide, they were feeding. And then on the way home, we ran up the east side, showed them the flats, made a few trips down inside the Keys there on the east side to show them what, you know, the place really looks like and what it does. Got them out over the reef, over the
middle. How was the water? Clear, murky?
The water on the west side's murky. The water on the east side's clear.
Gotcha. And you were on the east side, so it was clear.
Yeah, perfectly clear on the east side. It's almost gin clear down towards Pirate Harbor.
It's fun when you've got someone on the boat for the very first time running through clear water when it's 18 inches or 2 foot to 18 inches deep, because it looks like it's 4 inches deep.
It
has no depth. There's no depth perception on it.
Right.
And you take off and you're going and you're hitting about 30 miles an hour, and all of a sudden they look over to the side of the boat and you can see their face drain of color.
You see their face drain of color. If they're standing up and holding on to the T-top, you watch their knuckles turn pink.
Yeah. They just kind of grip in a little bit.
You see their butts clench.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It's a lot of fun.
Right. The
We're
first
not used
time
to
I rode in a tower.
Oh, I was no
the
different.
Flats.
I was no different.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at this going, there's no way I'm going through that. Because you're used to seeing it from a certain angle. When you change that perception,
it's even worse.
The first time.
It looks even shallower from up there.
Oh, man. It took about 6-8 trips for me to get so I could tell what the water was from the tower versus the deck.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to literally, I came close to,
who came out?
So it was like, but so anyway.
He got a good taste of the harbor. He really enjoyed the fishing down here. It was much, much different than bass. You know, it's an 8-pound black drum pulls just a wee bit harder than an 8-pound largemouth. So.
Oh, yeah. So now, what were we using for bait?
Shrimp, live and dead shrimp all day long.
Okay.
Got in there Tuesday with another group of guys on their boat. Again, another adventure. And I had told them up front, listen, we're going here. The fish are biting. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's where we're going. But I bumped bottom on my boat getting in the day before with two people. And now we have four in a Pathfinder.
Uh-oh.
And
that Pathfinder didn't make it back there, did it?
It did. It took a little manual help to get back there. But, hey, everybody out. So it was a lot of lift and push for about 100 yards.
Yeah.
And then once you got in there, you know, it's worth it because it's the same thing. You know, snook, redfish, black drum, sheephead, all day long. And the one thing that really surprised me that day is how turned on the snook were back in there. Usually in the wintertime, that place is a ghost town for big snook. You'll find a lot of 12-inch to 14-inch snook in that slot.
Right.
And all day long, all the way up through that slot, you could hear the big ones blasting.
Wow.
Just popping on the surface the whole way. And I sat out there the whole day. A handful of white bait, please. That's all I ask for. Just a handful. A couple pieces. That's all I want.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, there's none to be found after that cold front easily. So we were stuck back in.
Not within 6 miles of where you were.
No. Yesterday was an educational trip on their boat. We were on a pontoon boat.
Okay.
New Bennington.
I like pontoon
boats. I'll tell you what, this pontoon boat was probably the most thought out pontoon boat I have ever seen for fishing. And it's one of the new elliptical pontoons.
I don't know what that means.
The pontoons have a bend to them.
Gotcha.
So you get a much better ride.
Are they bent down in the middle or up in the middle?
They're bent down in the middle. So you almost have like a V-haul rise on the front of the pontoons.
Wow, that's cool.
It was cool. We come out into the Myakka River from the Elgin Beam boat ramp into that god-awful, annoying one-foot chop that's 6 inches apart from each other.
Right.
That'll just rattle your brains out. And that thing was smooth as silk through there. It was really,
almost like a catamaran.
I was really impressed. Yeah, I was really impressed with how well it actually rode. Nice live well up front. The live well in the middle has the bucket spot where you, if you have those two piece buckets,
right,
you can take the inner piece with all the shrimp out and set it right in the hole.
Wow.
And then you've got a full live well beside it, and it had another live well in the back, and nice rod holders in it. Very, very nice pontoon boat.
You want to join in?
The thing that really got me was,
well, you can still hang on. We got Dave, Mr. Luigi's here.
Yep.
You can get on that mic, Dave.
And his lovely wife. Don't just sit out there and wave. Come on in. There's no cameras. Nobody can see you. It's just here.
And that's a shame for you guys, because she's actually kind of pretty.
That is a shame for you guys.
Yeah.
We can get her wonderful voice on here, though.
Most of the girls don't do that. It's okay.
She's saying no nicely, but it is slowly getting not so nice, so quit pushing your luck, Dave.
Yeah. So, how's life at Luigi's, Dave?
Very good. Very busy. Very busy.
Yeah. Oh, you don't have to wear those. You can hear us. That's fine. So, yeah, we did the fishing club. We're already booked up. We did pick a topic. We're going to be talking about snook, if anybody asks.
We're going to do snook this time, huh?
Yeah, we're going to do snook. So.
Well, it's opening up March 1st.
Yep, that'll be a perfect time for it. Absolutely perfect time.
So, yeah, it's going to be a little different. We've got a bunch of stuff going on up there at Luigi's. We do our fishing seminars at Luigi's. It's the second consecutive Tuesday and Wednesday of the month. Tuesday's reserved seating. It's already booked, so we're booking now for, I think, the 18th?
18th of March.
Yeah, we're doing Wednesday the 18th. So we're already starting to fill up that room. If you'd like to get in on the snook seminars, just call 941-625-3888. I have too many telephone numbers.
You'll get it right.
Yeah, I'll get it right.
You can find it.
625-3888 and say, you know,
if something screams in your ear, that was the fax number, try the other one.
Yeah. So, anyway, Cale's been talking about his charters and what's been going on out there and on the water and stuff. So anyway, you were talking about Wednesday.
Yeah, we.
What brings you in, Dave? Sorry about that.
Actually, I was going to go shopping for Stacey. You guys have one of the largest selections of Casa Del Mar sunglasses.
Ah, I gotcha.
Next month.
Yeah.
So I came in to have her try on some of the glasses.
Kick tires now for the tent sale.
Yep.
Smart man.
Yep. Everything's that tent sale. This one's trying to kill me, but I just got done.
And if it doesn't, we're going to.
Yeah. So it's, yes, folks, I'm getting a little uptight with this. It's going to be a lot of people, a lot of fun. But you're welcome to go check out the selection of Costa Del Mar. I mean, we just got that other case, and so we got an extra.
Like 5-6 cases now. I was.
Yeah, it's 72 glasses a case. We got 5 cases. So
that's ridiculous.
I don't know what 5 times 72 is, but it's a lot.
Metric crap ton.
Yeah. So,
well, I was really happy to see them all, because, you know, we all have different sized heads, so that's perfect for them.
Well, we don't have every color and of lens and every color of frame, but we do have every frame they make, so that you can at least try them on. If you don't find the one you want, just let us know and we'll order the correct color.
That's what Barb said. She's like, whatever you guys want, if you like something in particular, we don't have it, we can order it for you. So
yeah, awesome. It takes about 2 days to get the stuff.
Yeah, Costa's real quick with their rollovers when we order. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll let you go look at Costa's.
Thank you for allowing me to sit in for a couple seconds.
This is Mr. Luigi's. When you come to the fishing club, Dave's the one that donates the room and the space to us, and which we are very grateful for, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So, anyway, we're back to Captain Cale. Let me see. That one's Cale. That one's that microphone.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Yeah, yesterday was gray and nasty. Misty all morning.
I heard the fog was real bad out.
In spots. In the El Jabin area, it was a high-level fog. You know, it wasn't right down on the water. You had good visibility. It was safe out there. But it was a high-level fog that was just constantly dropping that mist all day long.
Yeah, they said you couldn't wear your glasses. Your sunglasses were just instantly wet.
It was pointless.
It was pointless, yeah.
But, and I told these guys, we got a horrible tide. It's going from a 0.78 down to a 0.71. So the water is only dropping 0.76 of a foot in 3 hours.
Right.
I told them we're going to have to work for it until that tide turns around. And it was the complete opposite when we got out there.
It just
no water moving, and everything was biting. And then when it got clear, and the wind picked up and blew all that fog away, and the sun came out, and it got warm, and the tide turned around, everything shut off.
Really?
Yeah. So we sat at the Elgin Beam Bridge for the first 2 hours, and I was really surprised at what we caught. We caught some trout, silver and spotted.
Right.
We caught, I think they took 3 or 4 whiting home, good size whiting there. We caught 3 Kalnose rays. If you go to Elgin Beam, do not throw shrimp on a white jig head. For some odd reason, the Kalnose rays are sucking them right down.
Really?
Every last one hooked in the mouth. They ate it. It wasn't a snag. They were eating it.
I'll be darned.
And I caught one the same way last year.
Now, I know he's telling you not to, but I'm going to tell you, when you hook up a cow nose,
it's
cross between a Jack Crevel and a bonefish. Because the first run is screaming
gone.
I mean, you got 50 to 100 yards of line gone in a matter of a couple of seconds.
This isn't your normal stingray.
And
these things don't sit on the bottom their whole life. They swim their whole life.
Exactly. They never stop.
Right.
And when after they make that initial burst, everything's around the circle after that. Big, long arcs like a jack would do.
Right.
And you've got the whole body of the ray to fight against.
And that was the problem.
All the pilings.
No, the pontoon boat. You couldn't ask for a worse boat to fish from something that's going to do laps around the boat.
Oh, yeah, you got to thread it around all the posts.
You're threading it around all the posts and all the bimini tops and around pontoons and engines. We ended up breaking one rod because the guy was trying to get out and around it like that, and it got hooked up in the bottom finder transducer, and he was in there bending over the side of the boat trying to unhook it just as it took off on a run, and high sticked it upside down, which snapped it right at the handle. And
oh god!
But they are a blast. And I sat there. We had one run on my rod that don't know what it was. It came to the surface almost immediately and rolled. Where the bat rays or the cow nose rays don't do that. They stay down and just take off.
Right.
And I had just been sitting there saying, guys, I wouldn't be surprised if we catch a cobia here. We've got all the things to put it together. Small trout, small silver trout, and cow nose rays. There's bound to be cobia in here. And I really think that was probably what it was that took off.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't that zzz, 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 like you get with the cow nose rays flapping their wings. It was just steady, gone.
Hmm.
And it ran for about 100 yards, and the hook fell out.
You know, it's what I love most about this area because, you know, if I'm on a lake somewhere, I pretty much know what I
have. Yeah, you know what you're going to catch. You know,
and I know what I'm going to hook up. I pretty much know by the way it fought what I had on the line.
Yep.
But down here, there are so many possibilities.
You never know.
That you just, you know, you can guess at whatever, pick a fish that you want it to be. Because
the alligator walleye bike.
Yep, it's gone.
You've got a chance of catching one down here.
Yep. It's just nuts. But
that's what makes it fun, though.
Oh, that's the best part about it, is you never know what you're going to throw out. I mean, I was sitting up at I-75, had a Goliath grouper go by my boat I know was 600 pounds. Easily six.
Full on believe that. I've pulled big ones out from underneath. You know, I-75.
I kind of expect the 30, 50, 60, 80 pounders.
Yep.
But this thing was a full-on 600 pounds.
Sure.
I mean, that fish came by my flats boat. It was a fish.
And yeah, it wasn't a manatee. You know, you can tell the difference.
I'm pretty sure I know the difference.
Yeah.
And it was a Goliath grouper, plain as day. He was right under the surface. His dorsal was almost out of the water. But he was so big, he didn't have. He was probably only 2 feet off the bottom, maybe 3, and his dorsal fin was just barely below the surface.
He didn't have anything to worry about. It's the one fish that doesn't have to worry about getting eaten here.
No. I mean, I don't know anything. I've never seen, outside of a couple of the sharks out by Boca, some of the tigers or hammerheads, those would be the only thing I could think of. He would go after, I'm sure, a 4-foot shark to eat.
Oh, not a problem. Without a problem.
In one bite hole, I'm sure that fish could have taken a 4-foot shark.
I'd like to see that someday.
Yeah.
Just boom, suck it down.
I've watched video of him doing it.
Yeah, I'd love to see that in person.
Oh, yeah.
I've watched him suck down things that you never thought that they could suck down in one bite like that.
I still have a hard time imagining what the stomach lining of that fish is where they can swallow a live shark whole.
Right. I mean, think about that for a minute. I mean, okay, it ate a shark. Think about that for a minute. You know, how the shark is built, you're still eating something with a mouthful of razor blades that can bite back. Okay, it doesn't die as soon as it hits the stomach.
No.
It's still kicking. It's still capable of biting. Not to mention, it's covered in sandpaper.
And people, they eat a little bit of spaghetti, go, oh, we got heartburn, and, you know, and then you think about this fish eating a live shark.
Or a stingray.
You know, I mean, he can't sit there and drink a Coca-Cola and settle a stomach, you know? I don't get it. So, anyway, but to go back, so you had a pretty good day down there. Did you spend the whole day there, or did you go out in the harbor?
We spent the first couple hours right there at El Jabin, and then we went to the north end of the Mayak Cutoff, and then we went up inside Trout Creek.
Gotcha.
Didn't do any good inside the Mayak Cutoff. It was just starting to be the incoming tide, so that tide backs up at El Jabin, and it kind of makes the cutoff, the north end of the cutoff, go slack.
It's you weird there it because time. The water flows in the opposite direction right. that you expect
right.
it to flow.
Right.
Incoming tide looks like outgoing. Outgoing looks yep. like incoming. Yep. It's something about the way it hits the island and comes back around the back side of it. I don't know exactly how it works.
Yeah, it's just it's a big dull spot until that tide really gets ripping yep. and starts sucking it through there. Trout Creek, we got into some sheephead in there. I was really hoping that the redfish would have livened up by then, but they didn't. I'm sure if we'd have stayed there another hour, they probably would have as the tide got better, but
right.
we had already run through 120 shrimp, so good problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, if you've already been through 120 shrimp, you're in pretty good
yeah,
shape.
Yeah, and I think that's what they did. They dropped me back off at the dock. They went and got more shrimp, and I think they were headed back to Trout Creek because I was complaining the whole time. I wish I'd have brought more shrimp. I mean, these redfish are just going to start busting in here. And I think that's exactly what they did is they went bought more shrimp, went right back to Trout Creek. So
yep.
I'll probably give them a call when I get home and see if they did any good just to settle my mind.
Well, but it's always nice when, you know, you take people out, you show them everything, and then they run back out and get into those fish. That's
sure.
what it's all
sure.
about.
Yeah, that's the whole point of taking them out and teaching them how to do it is so they can go out there and do it on their own and not having to rely
and
on me.
What Captain Kale does is you can hire Kale and go on his boat and go to these spots on his boat if you're just down visiting for a few days. But if you're here and you do have your own boat, it's really not logical to get on somebody else's boat because, as we were discussing a little while ago, Kale's boat is going to be able to go places you might not be able to get to.
Right.
And the whole idea behind this is, if you have a boat, you need to learn how to use your boat, your tackle, your stuff to your best advantage. Not,
exactly.
okay, I'm on a guide's boat, and all right, I went where the guide, but I can't get where he went. And so you hire Kale.
Or you get to do what we did Tuesday, and that's get out and push.
Yep, yep, that's the other option, get out and push.
And I did find the one worse thing than a trailer hitch.
Oh, the...
Trim tabs. I got chunks out of my shins.
Yeah, that's sharp metal on that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Shallow water trim tab. I've walked around mine.
Oh, I thought about it. As soon as I got behind that boat, I'm going to bang up my shins. Took three steps and bang.
Yeah, I've worked around my trim tab so long, I know better. Because I have the old ones that had the trolling motor on it.
Ooh.
Worst junk in the world. The only good thing is they stick up high.
Yeah.
So I see them. If they were just the regular flat tabs,
yeah,
I wouldn't be able to see them.
Regular flat tabs.
Yeah.
They're sharp and they hurt.
Yeah. You ever walk behind a pickup truck and bang your shin into the trailer hitch? This is like the water, walking in water.
The waterborne equivalent of it.
Yes. Yep. So, yeah, it's an amazing, amazing experience to get that. And then you're stuck there in the water. It's like, you know, okay, I still got to push.
Well, the nice thing was is we went in on a trolling motor, and I told him, I said, we're not going to get much further than this, just as some guy come flying up the west wall in a Ranger and throwing a 6-foot spew of mud and come to a screeching halt right in front of us. And that's how you don't do it, guys. If you know it's shallow, slow down. You know, it's the west wall in the wintertime low tide. Right. You don't run up the middle of the flats out there. You're not going to make it.
Not usually.
No, I have trouble doing it in my boat.
Right. But the nice part about yours is if you hit bottom, if you stop, walk back and forth, it'll float.
Right.
It runs, right. It'll float in less water than it runs yep. in. Where a typical V-hull runs in less water than it floats in. So when it hits bottom, you go, mm-hmm. and then
and
plunk,
you're stuck there.
You're over on your side waiting yep. for that water to come up. Because it's 90% of all the boats out there literally will run in less water than they will float in.
Right.
So
right.
that can be a real problem. That's one great thing about your boat is it actually takes more water to run the boat than it does to float
yep.
it.
Yep.
So it's very, very difficult to get stuck somewhere with it. That you can't just walk it out.
Right, right.
There's a big difference between grabbing the nose rope and walking the boat out and lifting and pushing.
Lifting and pushing sucks.
Yes.
You know, and there's four of us doing it. And we couldn't have done it with three. That's for sure. As you get going about 10, 15 feet, and then everybody's just this side of a heart attack, and you're going to stop and take a break. And
well, what we do is rotate out. If I have two people or more, one person's on the rope in the front, and the other person is on the back doing the, you know, African queen pushing the boat.
Yep, lift up and push.
But the person on the front, their job is critical. They are pulling on the rope, but they're also pulling towards deeper water.
Right, right.
And because I never used to bother doing that, okay, you just help me push, but what happens if you push it into shallower water?
Right.
Then everything gets exponentially worse.
Worse.
So
the only, yeah, I told us just take more time. We'll get in here.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. It's tide's coming in. It's only getting deeper. It's only going to get easier.
Yeah.
No sense in getting ourselves all wore out.
Yeah. The quintessential Charlotte Harbor experience: get out and push.
Yeah, absolutely. That's,
if you have absolutely. A boat and you boat in or fish in Charlotte Harbor, you will get out and push one day.
Sooner or later, it's inevitable. It's, you know,
always happens.
If you're not running aground, you're not fishing Charlotte Harbor.
Nope.
Not seriously.
Well, the nice part about it is it's literally only that. You run up on a sandbar.
What do you do?
Yeah, it's not like you hit a granite rock or, unless you're Carl, there's really no way to
right.
do a lot of damage.
Or that goofball up in Ruskin.
Yeah, hit a restaurant.
Yeah.
Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, hit a restaurant.
Yeah, but I mean, if you get up to the point you're running into restaurants
with brand new electronics and radar,
you
ran into a restaurant.
Might want to figure that you really shouldn't be driving a boat.
And considering the restaurant was 50, 60 feet from the waterline, the dude was on a mission.
Well, it's really simple. He marked the restaurant on his GPS. It was so foggy you couldn't see. He got up on plane, running on the GPS line, but never bothered to mark where he had to anchor. So he was just going to the restaurant.
Well, from what I gather, the restaurant's by a channel. There's a right angle turn in the channel in front of the restaurant. And that's where he should have been going, was in the channel, and he went straight.
So, still, once again, I prove my point. You know?
I don't. They're still doing the investigation on it, but I'm going to put a big money bet down that autopilot was involved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, let's put in an autopilot and it'll run right to the restaurant.
How fast do you have to be going to get a 40-foot boat not only 60 feet up the beach, but half buried into a restaurant?
Gotta love it.
I mean, honestly, have you ever run aground and had your prop out of water?
You can't ask me that.
You know?
Yeah, I'm the wrong guy to ask. I literally launched into
that,
the mangroves.
That takes
work to
get your prop out of the water.
But we had to get the boat. We had to cut the branches off the trees to get the boat back on the ground.
I've intentionally put the skiff up on a beach.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's not difficult.
I have never been able to go fast enough to get the entire boat out of the water.
Oh, can't. Yeah, like I said, you're asking the wrong guy. I wish I could tell you, no, Kale, I've never actually experienced that, but to be quite honest with you.
Been there, done that, got the t-shirt, cut the sleeves off.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Got t-shirt, cut sleeves off already on that one. Literally, we were there chopping the branches off the trees to get the boat to go down to the ground level. The whole boat up in the air, stuck in the mangroves.
That'd be a sight.
It was.
Now
a sight.
Was it a mechanical failure or something like that, or?
Yeah, I got real stupid. I like to say, yeah, the throttle stuck and flambergeing, blew out, and the boat just went up there.
Just a loose screw behind the steering wheel.
The loose nut behind the steering wheel just decided I can make that curve. I can make that, I was coming back out of a creek, running a little late, storms coming, all the rest of that stuff, and took that boat around what was supposed to be a curve in the creek, and just never made it.
Not even close.
we came off there, it was about a 50, 60 degree turn, I probably made 80 degrees. Shoofed, right off the end of it. That's when I was learning about flat bottom boats.
Well, I can understand.
I never had a flat bottom, boat.
Well, they don't turn like a normal boat.
No, I think that one had like a 175 on it, and I was first time coming back up a creek, and we fished our way up, so never really thought about it. First day out with
the
boat.
No chines on the bottom like a skiff?
No chines, no nothing.
No, they just slide.
Man, that thing slid, and all we did was we hit the tree sideways, we hit the mud bar, launched in the air, and put it right up into the mangroves.
Nice.
Luckily, there was three of us, and we were all, in our 20s, Yeah. It was a great adventure. So, hey, we all got to learn.
Yeah, some learn the hard way. And
one of the things that makes me good at my job is very little that you can... You go out and say, Frank, this is what happened that I can't say. Well,
not only can you tell people the right way to do it, you can tell people the wrong way to do it.
Well, I understand what happened to him. Because, from line wrapped around my head, hook stuck in my body, you name it. Big knots, little knots, I've had it all. So,
I guess I'm kind of lucky. I don't get hurt very often. A couple hooks in the hands here and there, but even that never happened until recently. I've been fishing for 30 years. And it took 30 years to put a hook in my hand.
Oh, yeah, but it's all good. It comes exponentially, So
well, that's what I'm worried about. Is this all this stuff going to happen next year at once?
Yeah, if you're frank, it does. Okay, anyway, so now that we've had this little front, I guess the big question is, what's it going to do to the fishing?
I've given up trying to guess it. You might as well go out to the front counter and use the magic eight ball, because you can't tell. On the days that I expected it to be bad, it was good. All you can get out there and do is fish.
Mm.
Give it your best guess, and if your guess doesn't work, make sure you've got that plan B and even plan C ready to go, because you may need it.
Exactly.
It's getting so hard to judge, and the fronts are getting so close and so rapid that it's been real hard to tell what the fish are going to do. We lost some water temperature with that cold front. It's right back up to 65.
Yeah.
So that didn't change much.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the water temp in the harbor is, because we deal with a lot of surface temperatures, because that's where we get all information.
Now, the Myakka was 65.
I'm going to be really curious to find out what it's like 3 to 5, 3 or 4 feet down in the water.
The Myakka is a little bit murkier, so I expect that to be a little warmer. But it's anybody's guess. At this point, you're playing the lottery.
Yeah, I'm taking a thermometer with me when I get out next week, and I'm going to drop it down 8 feet in the harbor and try and get a temp, then come up and put it on the bottom in the flats and try and get a temp.
I think your flats...
I want to see what the surface versus 3 feet down, what the surface versus 8 feet is.
Your flats are going to be 63 to 65, I think, by the time you get out there and do it.
We were showing 69 and all the way up into 71 on the thing down towards Pirate Harbor.
Really?
Yeah, but that was, you know, idle on the surface. And, you know, a little boat idling doesn't, you know, create any disturbance, really. So.
Well, after jumping out of the boat Tuesday, I can tell you the water in the West Wall is not 70 degrees.
No, I don't believe it, but that's what I'm saying. The surface temps are such a variable from a couple of feet down.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I'm really kind of curious to find out where all this is going to go.
Yeah, I am too, and it's something that I've really got to get, like a good underwater thermometer to drop down and really get decent water temperatures at different depths. The one on my fish finder finally kicked out and quit working, so.
Mm, but the best we can get off the fish finders is surface temp anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Anyway, what else can we go over today?
I think
TFO Rods was here this morning.
Oh,
boys
they?
And girls. And
anything new in their lineup that is
Gary,
worth mentioning?
Gary Loomis is the one who does all the designs and everything, and he does Edge and TFO. And Gary, he was bringing in some stuff. Gary's sending a bunch of fly rods down for while he's here at the tent sale on March 14th. So
I have never heard a single bad thing about TFO's fly rods.
No.
Not a one.
No. And you're going to be able to buy a TFO. And Gary loves to wheel and deal. He just has a ball with his customers. And, you know, Gary is really one of the nicest people I've had the pleasure to deal with in a long time. And so, really, if you get a chance, stop by and say hi to Gary. And no G Loomis stuff. Shimano, who now owns the brand G Loomis, is messing with Gary again. I just heard about what happened at one of the big deals where Gary and them were at, and they're messing with him again. I can't believe that. I mean, so anyway, but he's got Edge and TFO. And another one of the many reasons Shimano will not be this year again.
His new Edge rods are nice.
They're beautiful. They're pricey.
They are pricey, but
now I will promise you, if you want to buy one, I know that this at this tent event with Gary here is the day to buy an Edge rod. They're $400 to $550. And if you want to save some money, get a signed Gary Loomis rod. Now, TFOs you can buy for less than $100 that day.
Right.
Actually, quite a bit less. And all the way on up through, so you're talking much less than $100 all the way through till close to $500, $600.
Right.
And from fly rod, spinning, bait casting, all these different types of rods. And but Gary is the man. He is just cool.
I checked out one of the Edge bait cast rods, and it is a beautiful, beautiful rod.
Yeah, it's a little more money than I'm going to.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I am going to fish one of them. I am going to take it out and go fishing with it this week. I'm taking Edge out just to try it out and get a feel for it. And so Monday when I go fishing, I will have an Edge, and I'll give everybody a report on what it's like to fish with a, you know, I don't know if I'm taking the $400 one or the $550
one. Good lightweight rods. You're into the lightweight stuff now.
Oh, yeah, microweight.
Yeah, and they're very, very light, bright rods. I did like that. I've kind of started to shift into the light stuff myself.
Yeah,
so.
The actions are medium heavy, stuff like that. But what we're discussing is physical weight of the rod
is
microweight. I mean, it's just they don't weigh anything. You've literally got nothing in your hand. So that's, you know, you always got to be careful when you talk about weight of the rod, because people get confused with the action and the actual physical weight.
Especially when you get into fly rods.
Yeah, I'm going to put my Fluger on
I think
one.
It's real confusing.
Yeah, I'm going to put my Fluger on one of them, the lightest reel in the world, and see what that does. It's got to be... I almost don't want it to be good.
Yeah, because then you'll have to buy one.
I would have to get one. I got to go through, come back, pay the sales tax on it, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, actually invest that
money.
Well,
maybe you should wait until the 14th of March and see what kind of a deal Gary will give you on it.
No, I'm gonna try one out. I want to know what I'm talking about before then. I haven't had a chance. Now, I did the Star prototype rod. Have you fished one of the new prototypes?
He gave me one. I haven't had a chance to get it out there and fish it yet.
That's spectacular.
Is it?
It's going to be pricey, but amazing action and strong. Oh my God, strong.
See, I liked the...
And weighs nothing.
The plasma, the 8-foot plasma that he had me check out. I thought it was a little fragile. We snapped the tip off on a ladyfish. It was kind of goofy because the ladyfish jumped, and when it jumped and shook its head, it threw the line about 2 inches down the rod, and it wrapped around the rod and got caught on a rod eye.
Right.
So then, of course, when the ladyfish slammed back into the water, it cut that part of the rod off.
Right.
That being said, they were K-guides.
Well, I don't think this could happen with this blank. This blank is so much stronger than anything I've seen. It's actually stronger than the plasma and all the rest of them he's got. Those are the, which is incredible in strength. But it's light like the Seagis, except it's incredibly strong.
Yeah, he did give me one of the 8-footers of the test rod. I'll have to...
On the plasma.
He gave me the plasma, and when I broke it, then he gave me one of these new test rods in 8-foot.
The new test rods?
Yeah.
Yeah, so these are going to be expensive little rods. These are not for the faint of heart. If you throw lures all day, and if they bring this rod out, this is going to be spectacular. But, you know, it's still a matter if they're going to bring it out. I did
That's
do the pen
why
reel.
Why I haven't used
trolled
it.
Trolled that new pen reel are coming out with this fall, and you guys are going to love that. Penn is going to be here with amazing stuff, amazing deals. Last year they gave away 96 or 98,000 yards of line.
I was in the warehouse the other day and saw some of the stuff that you guys and Gary from Penn put together and have got sitting out there waiting for the sale.
Well, I wish it was me, but actually that's it. All that stuff is all about Penn. I wish I had some more to do with what they were doing and how they were doing it, but I really don't. I didn't get a chance to see it until after, you know, they got all done with that. I was just looking. That's 294,000 feet of line, and if you divide that by
5,280
equals, yeah, you're...
It was 54 and a half miles.
Yeah, almost 55 miles.
Fishing line.
55.68 miles of fishing line they gave away in one day.
Right.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. They have big pen deals. So
that's anyway. A lot of spools of line.
Oh, my God.
A lot of spools.
So, anyway, getting back onto it, the fishing out here has been very good.
It's going to do nothing but get better. We're getting warmer. These cold fronts are going to start getting less and less and go away. Hopefully this wind will die down this summer. It didn't last summer. I think the fish to start watching for right now is cobia.
Yeah, hearing a lot of
really
reports.
I've seen more and more reports.
Vinny got one at the mouth of Alligator Creek.
Vinny
got
one.
Three of them out in the harbor.
Tom Fisher had one the other day. Mal and Andrew saw one out by... I think they were out in the middle of the harbor and saw one.
Right.
That little cut on the west wall of mine that day that we were in there, I'm 99% sure that was a cobia, about a 4-foot cobia that was stuck inside that hole because he was just swimming back and forth. And the first time he went by, I thought it was just a big black drum.
Right.
Because when those black drum get big, they can get either really, really dark or really, really light.
Yeah.
And there was one hanging out at Lashley for the longest time that was almost white. I thought it was albino. It was
What's
so light.
What's weird is I don't really, Robert and I talked about that a bit earlier, I don't see those white ones on the Port Charlotte side. We see them on the Punta Gorda side quite often.
Yeah, now that you mention that, I've never
We've seen them in
really
Cape Coral in the canals.
It.
We've seen them in PGI canals, Lashley. I don't know that I've actually seen one of them, and I could be wrong.
Fertilizer.
That's kind of what I thought. You know,
it's got to be something. It's got to be something in the
Robert
in the
thinks
water
it's
there.
A lack of structure, but I'm not sure how that would play into
No,
it.
There's a lot more structure inside the Punta Gorda canals than there is inside the Port Charlotte canals. You got a lot of boats that just don't move in PGI ever.
It's overhead structure, though. I think what he's talking about is
even the boats that sit in the water. I mean, where does the cobia end up when your boat sits in the water?
Underneath the boat.
Where do we fish for the snook when we're in the canals.
On their way.
On the boat. So where do you think the black drum are going to be?
Yeah. So anyway, but this is Fish and Frank. That's Captain Kale in the chair across from me. Explain what you do, Captain.
I do both fishing charters on my boat and your boat. Like Frank was saying earlier, if you're new to the area, or you're down here visiting, or you don't have a boat and you want to go fishing, you can jump on my boat and we can go fishing for half a day or a full day. If you do have a boat, or you're in the process of buying a boat and just want to see what the harbor's about, we can do trips on your boat if you already have it. Both harbor tours, which I recommend if you're new. We go out, we take a look at the harbor, show you where you should and shouldn't be in your boat, places of interest where you can get dinner, get lunch, get fuel, go to the bathroom, get out of the rain, stuff like that. And we also do fishing trips on your boat, which is harbor fishing 101 or even offshore fishing 101.
Or even just, okay, you want to go out and catch
fish. Yeah, you just want to go out and catch fish. You don't want to learn, you just want to catch fish. We go out and we do that too.
Yeah.
Much cheaper on your boat. It's about half the price of the charter on my boat. And it really works out well because you really should learn on your boat, not mine.
So, you know, a lot of things you can do and have fun with down here in Charlotte Harbor. The weather's spectacular, and I really can't think of any reason why you're not here in Florida, because I don't know any place else the weather's any good.
The weather's great. You get great tax benefits, especially if you're a veteran down here. You homestead your home instead of keeping a winter home down here. It's much, much cheaper to actually live here than it is to commute back and forth.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm not up on all that stuff. I'm, you know. But all I know is, why aren't you in Florida? It's pretty cool here right now. So,
well, they had that map on TV that 49 out of 50 states have got snow on the ground.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, you think that 50th state would be Hawaii, but it's not.
It's not. Hawaii has snow year-round. The mountaintops there in Hawaii keep snow year-round.
Yeah, we have no snow on the ground. None. Not a bit.
No, we're the only state without snow.
You don't have salt trucks screwing up the underbody of your vehicle. You don't have to worry about getting plowed into your driveway.
I can honestly tell you I'd forgotten about that until somebody came down. I was looking at used cars. Remember when I was trying to buy a truck?
Yeah.
I was trying to buy, I needed a new truck. Mine, everybody was giving me a lot of grief. It was worn out. You know, just because when you took off, you had to hold the dash on. And, you know, if you, going down the road and the oil pressure went to zero, if you went to neutral, turned it off and turned it back on, it ran fine again.
Right.
I mean, I was used to it. I didn't care. But, so I ended up getting a truck. But I looked at one they brought up for me to look at. And I always look underneath. I guess it's leftover habit from being up north.
Oh, absolutely. I do the same thing.
And
the exact same thing.
And I mean, talk about corroded. Holy cow, I haven't seen anything like that in decades.
I had a guy pop the hood on a truck for me, and I looked at that little insulating piece, and it was white. You know, a white area on it. And I went there with my finger, and I licked it, and I tasted it, and said, yep, that's salt.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, you start looking underneath and see what damage is done. But, and that's the beautiful thing. If you're a mechanic up north, come down here. You have no idea how nice it is to work underneath a car and not have to dig rust out of your eyes for the next 3 days.
Or get a torch to get the bolt out.
Yeah, one or the other.
So, all right. Well, anything else today, Captain?
No, not that I can think of. Don't forget our tent sale on March 14th. It is going to be the place to be on Saturday. I'm hoping the weather's horrible. We would like to see see a nice windy day. We don't want people going fishing that day. We want them coming here.
Yeah. I'm just hoping for anything good. So anyway, we're gonna let the Youpers take us out of here.
Driven by my buddy Mike.
Yeah, there he goes.
We're fishing out on the basin for alligator walleye pike. Emo brought his TV and wrote this big old Fred. He's too old to drive a rabbit, so he comes fishing with us instead. We got lawn chairs, a poker table, and I
see why I love pontoon boats. What else can you put
it down with so much stuff? Mike can hardly steer.
Okay, well. Anyway, 28% of Pontoon Bill. We're fishing for Moby Dick, and it's a little bit like heaven when you're out fishing with the guys. Fishing Frank here, Captain Kalen, chair across from me. We'll catch you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.